Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. You can find me at colleenpatrickgaudreau.com or joyfulvegan.com. You can subscribe to this podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying this podcast, I just ask that you share it with others and leave ratings and reviews. Word of mouth is the best way to increase its listenership. And of course, supporting it is the best way to keep it going. You can go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau to support this work, especially if you already subscribe and you already listen or get anything out of this podcast at all. And I thank you in advance. Spots are filling up for the Compassion in Action Conference here in Oakland. So go to CompassionInActionConference.com and join me for a life-changing, life-enhancing event where you will connect with dozens of like-minded men and women to learn to be the best, most effective, most joyful ambassador of compassion you know. We're selling out of the platinum level. It's almost sold out, whereby you come and visit me on Friday night before the event at my home and you enjoy some extra gifts and goodies. And at the conference itself, we're going to be talking all about effective advocacy, turning your passion into a career or using your passion to be effective in your current career, effective communication, remaining joyful and hopeful in a challenging world, practicing self-compassion, and talking all about zero waste principles, as we're doing on this podcast. The event is inspirational, informational, and joyful. We have the most wonderful speakers coming this year, and we have the most wonderful participants. Put your compassion into action and join me by registering today, CompassionInActionConference.com. Today's topic is food waste, part two. Food is not garbage. Hi, everyone. I just returned home from our latest CPG vegan trip, this time to Vietnam. It was an incredible 2 weeks with the most wonderful group of people. Totally fell in love with Vietnam, and I will be continuing to add new content over at joyfulvegan.com. So be sure to go to the blog and subscribe to it so you don't miss those posts. It's different than joining the mailing list. Signing up for the blog or subscribing to the blog means that you'll get a notification when I have new blog posts. It's different than the mailing list. I'm also going to be writing a podcast episode on being vegan in Vietnam, so stay tuned. We are sold out of our upcoming CPG vegan trips to Alsace, France, to Rwanda, but we've got a number of trips up our sleeves. You can go to cpgvegantrips.com to see what they're all about, and I hope you can join us on one of these trips someday because they are truly, truly magical, and I'll talk more about them and it, the Vietnam trip, in that episode. Quick announcement also, I have signed a contract for my eighth book, and I'm very excited about it. It's called In Defense of Compassion, The Joyful Vegan's Guide to Life in a Non-Vegan World. In short, it demonstrates that compassion is deeply rooted in our culture, in our history, in our hearts, and debunks the myths that have undermined veganism for decades. In Defense of Compassion, empowers readers to embrace their instinct for getting meat, dairy, and eggs out of their lives and to build the skills they need not only to become vegan, but to stay vegan with confidence and joy. I don't have a publication date yet. Of course, I just signed a contract. I still have to write the book, but that's what I'm going to be working on for the next 8 months, along with this podcast, along with the Compassion in Action Conference and everything else that I try to do. So, to move on to our episode at hand, if you haven't listened to Food Waste, Part 1, How Meat, Dairy, and Eggs Hinder Zero Waste Goals, I encourage you to do so. It's going to give you a full picture of the issue we're tackling here. I'm going to refer to it a couple times as well. We focused on food loss in Part 1, the food waste that occurs on the front end of the food chain at the production and harvest and processing levels. We talked about the fact that one third or 1.3 billion tons of global food production is either wasted or goes uneaten. We talked about the fact that livestock accounts for the highest amount of waste in the food sector and that the word garbage is an animalogy. It originally referred specifically to the bowels and body parts of animals we don't consume. Almost 50% of animals slaughtered for human consumption is waste. In other words, garbage is built into the meat, dairy, and eggs people consume. Today, we're going to talk about a subset of food loss, which is food waste, which occurs toward the back end of the food chain at the retail and consumer levels. Food waste refers to the deliberate discarding of food because of human action or inaction. According to Wasted, how America is losing up to 40% of its food from farm to fork to landfill, a report updated in 2017 by the NRDC, the National Resources Defense Council, households are responsible for the largest portion of all food waste. Estimates of U.S. household food waste totals, wait for it, 76 billion pounds, or 238 pounds of food per person annually. According to a Guardian report from 2016, roughly 50% of all produce in the United States is thrown away. Some 60 million tons, or $160 billion worth of produce annually. As I said in part one, we have a problem here. We're creating it, and we can solve it. Are you with me? If you are, one of the things I'm going to do is encourage you to ask yourself, how much waste do I create? It's not just a question with a theoretical answer. There is a measurable, tangible answer. So how much waste do you create? I'm going to ask you to track it for a week, all of it, all of your waste, including food waste. This is similar to what I recommend people do before taking the 30-day vegan challenge. Everyone says they don't eat a lot of meat, dairy, and eggs, but until you really pay attention, you really don't know how much a lot is or how much not a lot is. I don't eat a lot of meat, dairy, and eggs, people say, but compared to what? Compared to how much you really want to eat, compared to how much people ate 100 years ago, compared to how much you could eat. Everyone says they don't eat a lot of meat, dairy, and eggs, and yet 10 billion animals are brought into this world only to be killed every year in the United States. Worldwide, we're talking about 60 billion animals every year. So someone is eating the animals. It's the same thing with waste. Most people would say, I don't really create a lot of waste. I recycle almost everything. Well, first of all, remember, the first episode on zero waste I did, it's called Zero Waste, It Ain't About Recycling. Go listen to that episode to find out why it ain't. But second, look, just as most people consider themselves compassionate or animal lovers, but eat meat, dairy, and eggs, i.e. eat animal flesh and fluids, and I did, most people perceive themselves as good stewards of the earth. In fact, the majority of the public identifies as environmentalists. And yet, according to the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, Americans generate about 254 million tons of garbage a year. Broken down, that means the average American produces 4.4 pounds of trash every single day, significantly more than the global average, which is 2.6 pounds per person per day. So someone is producing the garbage, and it's not the guy next to us, it's us. Well, it is the guy next to us, and it's us. In fact, you may have heard recently, it made headlines in newspapers all around the world, that according to a three-year-long mapping study conducted by eight different organizations, the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is bigger than experts originally thought, and it's getting bigger. If you've never heard of this, you can easily find a ton of information on it online if you just search for the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch, if you haven't heard of it, is 80,000 tons of waste, mostly plastic, lurking in the ocean between Hawaii and California, and it gravely, gravely affects marine wildlife. According to the study, the patch is now two times larger than the size of Texas, and it spreads over more than 600,000 square miles of water. We did that. We did that, and it's not something to be proud of, but we can stop it, each one of us. As with transitioning to being vegan, aspiring to live zero waste or just reduce the impact on this earth is about doing the best we can. It's not about being perfect, but there is so much we can do, and that's where the hope lies. And it starts with examining our habits and making some changes that replace those old habits with new ones. So I ask, how much waste do you create in a day, in a week? Take a waste audit so you know. You can do this for the whole family. You can do this at work. You can do this with friends and neighbors. If you're a teacher, you can do it with your students. Getting a sense of how much you create will motivate you to reduce it. Today, we're going to talk about how to reduce your food waste. And of course, over the course of this podcast and my blog and a future project that I can't talk about, you will hear about many strategies and tips for doing so. But if you go to joyfulvegan.com on the page for today's episode, you're going to find my guidelines for creating a waste audit. And don't forget, recyclable products count as waste. So include those as part of your audit. Now, I think you're going to be surprised by the results. And I think it's a good bet that you'll find that you create a lot more food waste than you ever dreamed. Whatever percentage of your total waste is food waste, we all have a long way to go, especially if we aspire to do right by this earth. So how can we do that? How can we have a lighter footprint? How can we reduce our waste? How can we aspire to be zero waste? So let's back up. First of all, remember the comprehensive 2017 study I cited in part one called Losses, Inefficiencies, and Waste in the Global Food System? It identified food losses in six categories. Those categories were 1, agricultural production, 2, livestock production, 3, handling, storage, and transportation, 4, processing, 5, consumer waste, that's losses and waste between food reaching the consumer and being eaten, and 6, overconsumption, the additional food intake over that required for human nutrition. In part one, we talked about agricultural production, livestock production, handling, storage, transportation, and processing. Today, in part two, we're going to talk about consumer food waste and overconsumption of food. The highest amount of food waste in the entire food production stream occurs at this consumer level in the home. That's 40%. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, defines food waste for the United States as, quote, uneaten food and food preparation wastes from residences and commercial establishments such as grocery stores, restaurants, and produce stands, institutional cafeterias and kitchens, and industrial sources like employee lunchrooms, unquote. And according to the same EPA, wasted food is the single biggest occupant in American landfills, accounting for 21% of municipal solid waste, adding more waste to landfills and incinerators than any other product. And this doesn't even include food and beverages disposed of in other ways, such as down kitchen drains, including garbage disposal. I think that accounts for about 10%, but it still counts. So when you're doing your own waste audit, don't forget to include what food you would normally throw into the sink, into the garbage disposal. Nothing should go into the garbage disposal other than remnants of food that gets stuck to a pot or something when you're doing dishes. And for us in our home, we do have to account for food on the cat plates that our cats, Charlie and Michiko, don't lick off their plates. Charlie usually makes sure that all the food is completely licked off both of their plates. But other than that, we don't put any food into the garbage disposal. It counts as garbage. And we don't put any food into the garbage can. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. In my home, my husband implements everything we're going to talk about today, as well as composting, which we're going to talk about in part three. I did not expect the food waste topic to take 3 episodes, but there's so much to say about this, as you can see, hopefully, as you can hear. And we're going to talk about composting in part 3. Now, remember, according to the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council, Americans throw away up to 40% of food that's safe to eat, 40% of perfectly edible food. So what, you might say? Food naturally decomposes. It's eventually going to break down. So what's the big deal, you may be asking? Well, first of all, number one, organic material doesn't just decompose by way of divine intervention. It relies on microbial activity. And in order for microbes to be able to do their job, certain conditions need to be met. First and foremost, they need oxygen. They also need moisture, the right ratio of nutrients, specifically the ratio between carbon and nitrogen. They need the dispersal of those nutrients by way of turning and stirring. And they need a size small enough to start with that makes the decomposition take place rapidly or at all. These are not the conditions of municipal dumps and landfills. When food is piled up with waste on top of it and more waste and more waste and more waste and more waste, there's no oxygen. As a result, food buried in the airless confines of dumps generates methane, a greenhouse gas 23 times as potent as carbon dioxide in trapping heat within our atmosphere. In fact, solid waste landfills are one of the largest human-made sources of methane gas in the United States, next to livestock and the extraction and burning of fossil fuels. Animal advocates and vegans love to quote the research that shows how responsible livestock is for producing methane. And it's true, I'm not taking away from that at all. But methane, the second most prevalent greenhouse gas that's released into the air, is also produced by landfills in the United States. In fact, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, again, landfills account for 34% of all methane emissions in the United States. Globally, the FAO found that global food waste is responsible for an estimated 3.3 gigatons of greenhouse gas emissions. That's twice the total greenhouse gas emissions of all vehicles on all roads in the United States in 2010. If global food waste were its own nation, it would be the world's largest greenhouse gas emitter. And even we vegans, who may not be contributing to the greenhouse gas emitting meat, dairy, and egg industries, are contributing to it by the amount of food waste we produce, even if it's vegan food waste. And as you heard, produce accounts for 50% of the food thrown out in the United States. So Even we vegans who like to think that we do everything right, and we don't, even the apple we're throwing away or the vegan sandwich you made and didn't eat yesterday, it's increasing your personal and our collective carbon footprint. We're all responsible. So number one, greenhouse gas emissions from landfills because of food, not because of other items. It's because of food. Number two, food wasted means money wasted, which is a concern for millions of people, especially if they have financial constraints. A study done by National Geographic in 2014 valued the food waste in American homes to be at $162 billion annually. So it's from spills, spoilage, table scraps, and other food losses from the typical American family of four add up to 1,160 pounds of uneaten food annually. That translates to an average of $1,600 worth of edible food every year. The NRDC report I mentioned earlier found the number to be even higher, more like $450 a person, which is about $1,800 per year per household of four. Other experts say it's even higher when you account for the 10% of food that's thrown into the garbage disposal, estimating the dollars thrown away to be closer to $2,275. Whether it's $1,600 or $2,275, imagine throwing that much in cash. Imagine you taking $1,600, $2,200 in paper money and throwing that into the trash bin and throwing that into the garbage can. Of course, we would never do that. And yet we're throwing out that much money in the equivalent of the food we throw into the bin in the United States. In the United Kingdom, the annual 6,700,000 tons of wasted edible food amounted to about 10.2 billion pounds each year, which translates to about 400 pounds a year per household. Still nothing to sneeze at, not an amount you would ever throw into the bin. So that's number two. Food loss means money wasted. Food wasted means money wasted. Number three, dumping food waste in landfills means animals such as rats, birds, flies are attracted to it, particularly to the strong odor. Because remember, there's little oxygen for the microbes to do their work. But think about it. Without food waste, dumps wouldn't smell. Rotting food is what makes dumps smell. Without food waste, there wouldn't be a rodent issue. Not that there's anything wrong with rodents, in my opinion, but when they're considered pests, and they're always considered pests by the public and by the city, whatever city, then they increase in number, then there's human-animal conflict, which inevitably results in a full-on lethal attack on these animals who are systematically poisoned or trapped or killed one way or another. And that's once the food makes its way to the dumps. What about the complaints people have about animals they consider pests in their own backyards? Raccoons, rats, mice, possums. If people weren't throwing out food, they wouldn't have this constant battle with wild animals who are just being opportunistic and looking for their next meal. As for the birds, there are studies that indicate that food waste in dumps is causing a problem for them as well. For instance, there are huge safety issues for birds and planes when landfills are near airports. It's such a serious concern that the Federal Aviation Administration won't permit new landfills to be built near airports. Pre-existing landfills near airports are closely monitored to ensure that there are as few conflicts as possible. But it's a big deal. It's a big problem with planes and landfills because of birds nearby. Also, some animal species, particularly birds, and mostly those whose habitats we've destroyed and natural food sources we've depleted, have become so dependent on human food waste that some of their migration patterns are changing. A March study led by a UK scientist found that white storks in Europe, who previously migrated to Africa for the winter, have started staying in Spain and Portugal year-round because they're addicted to the junk food they eat in landfills in those countries. The bottom line is food doesn't belong in dumps. And because we're allowing it to happen, because we're causing it to happen, we're affecting the lives of animals. Not to mention the fact that dumps in general displace animals and destroy habitats and homes because we convert nature into a place to bury all of our crap. I have to quote Paul Palmer once again. He's the person I mentioned in part one of Food Waste. He's the coiner, or actually, I think part one of Zero Waste. He's the coiner of the term zero waste. He's the author of Getting to Zero Waste, and he writes, quote, "The only reason that anything takes on the features of standard garbage is that it's contaminated with organic matter, meaning primarily food. That's why it's thought of as smelly and dirty. If every single scrap of excess food is intelligently handled and no organic matter ever contaminates the recyclable goods, then essentially every excess can be sent out for recycling." And he means that in the largest sense, the greatest sense of that word. "There's nothing that smells or coats a can with fetid slime or attracts flies, rats, ants, or other varmints. Instead of garbage being something that decomposes, ferments, and stinks, your garbage becomes clean and odor-free. You can store it for 6 months, by way of example, and it won't matter that much. If there's a garbage strike, you are unaffected. Around the world, when there are garbage collecting strikes, governments go crazy because of the odors and health problems. Not you. Not if there's no organic matter anywhere in your discards," end quote. And I experienced this firsthand in our own home. When we first started the zero waste journey, I was so concerned about what we were going to use as a plastic liner for our garbage cans. We have a garbage can and we have a recycling bin. Now we have a lot more, and I'll explain that on another episode. But in the garbage can, it used to be a garbage can that had food waste and things smelled after a while. And of course, we had a plastic liner. Things would get wet. It would get disgusting and we would throw it down into the garbage, right? Now, because we don't put any food waste in our garbage can and because we don't put anything dirty or smelly in our garbage can, we didn't need a liner. We stopped using garbage liners. So now we don't use a garbage liner because there's nothing smelly. It's very exciting. I have thought about garbage more than I ever thought I would. I have read more about garbage than I ever thought I would. And this whole concept of garbage not including food, of food not being garbage, completely changed my way of thinking. It's been quite paradigm shifting. I don't know about you, but it's kind of mind blowing. Yeah, food isn't garbage, and food doesn't belong in the garbage can. Number four, food wasted is energy wasted from cradle to grave. When we squander food in the home, it means we squander the vast resources, the vast quantities of oil and agricultural chemicals, water, land, and human labor that went into producing it. Think about the fact that once food gets into our home, it's already undergone transport, storage, often cooking. So throwing food away at the consumer level has a larger resource footprint than at any other point in the food chain. A McKinsey consulting study reports that household losses are responsible for an average of 8 times the energy waste of post-harvest losses. And of course, the edible food that gets wasted, and much of the food we discard in our homes is edible, so it's food that people could really use. If we gave just 1/3 of the food that we now throw away to people in need, it would more than cover unmet food needs across the country. And finally, in that same category, one last way we squander resources in the discarding of our food has to do with the nutrient values inherent in the organic matter that is food, especially produce. The fruits and vegetables and the grains and the beans we're throwing out could be productively returned to the soil where they belong, not languishing in dumps uselessly and harmfully. One final consequence, this is the fifth consequence of food being thrown away, is calories wasted in the form of overconsumption. That is, we get more calories than are needed to meet our nutrient requirements. A study conducted by Scottish researchers at the University of Edinburgh using data collected by UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, that's the FAO, found that we're eating 10% more than we need to, which accounts for a lot. This is an aspect of food waste I hadn't really given much thought to until I started really doing research for this episode. You'd think, wait, that doesn't make any sense. If the problem is we're throwing food away, then isn't it a good thing that instead of throwing food away, people are eating it? Well, no. First of all, not only does overeating lead to health issues, the demand for more food, particularly in developed areas like Europe and North America, puts pressure on the food production side to produce more food. And then much of that food gets thrown away once it gets to our homes.
Also, remember the data I mentioned in part one, gathered by researchers and published in Agricultural Systems, that publication? Because food waste is more rampant in the meat, dairy, and egg industries than in any other, our demand for these animal products around the globe means more food waste, more food loss, more environmental degradation. And because waste is built into the harvesting and producing and processing of these animal products, lots of waste occurs before it even gets into our hands. And then, of course, we waste it in our homes. Not you listening, because you don't eat meat, dairy, and eggs, right? But for the majority of people who do, that's wasted. So there's just rampant amounts of waste in consuming animal products. Just in terms of emissions created during this process, it's estimated that lower meat consumption would cut food-related emissions by 29%. Vegetarian diets would cut food-related emissions by 63% and vegans by 70%. So that's pretty significant. Those are some of the ill effects of food waste on the environment, on the animals, on our wallets, on our health, and on food security around the globe. And though the home is where we see the most amount of food waste taking place, food waste in restaurants is on the rise with increasing portion size and misestimations of inventory. And we're responsible for that too. We all put more on our plates than we really need or want or can eat. And so we waste a lot of food when we go to restaurants as well. So it's all of us responsible for this together. So there's a lot of work to be done in every sector, and there's a lot we can do in our own lives. That is the good news. That's the really good news, but we have to be willing to implement the solutions. So let's talk about the solutions. First, I want to thank all of you who are helping me create solutions by supporting this podcast and my blog and my work in general, enabling me to share the tools and resources people need to cause as little harm as possible. So thank you to all of you listeners, the subscribers, the supporters. If you're getting anything out of this work, please join fellow supporters, including our Platinum supporters, the same people you've heard again and again. If you'd like to join at the Platinum level, you get lots of perks, lots of bonuses. And of course, you know that you're supporting work that's really making a difference. Of course, Tim Anderson, Renee Marinkovich, David Cabrera, Alexander Gray, Morgan Hall, Michal Stone, and Ulrich, and Charlie, Who wants attention right now? We also have a new gold supporter in Inez Redondo Rua, who joins our other amazing gold supporters and who wrote a lovely email accompanying her contributions. He said, "Hello, Colleen. I'm a passionate pre-kindergarten teacher with a less than optimal salary, but who cares? With the exception of the summer months during which I do not get paid, I'm proud to donate to your cause. If this helps you a bit to keep doing what you do because you do it so beautifully, I am content. A hug and take care." A hug back to you, Inez. Thank you so much for taking part of your salary to support this work. It means so much to me. I'm so grateful. And I promise you, I will make the most of your support. I always try to. So thank you, Inez, and everyone who supports this. The more resources I have, the more I can accomplish. So please consider becoming a patron over at patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau. And remember, those at the $10 a month and above level receive transcripts to all these episodes, including this one, which has a lot of stats and numbers and studies that I'm referring to. Those at $30 and above receive bonus material in addition. And this podcast episode comes with some awesome bonus material. Keep listening to hear what that is. So thank you again, everyone. So understanding why food waste occurs at the retail and consumer levels will help us understand how we can reduce and prevent perfectly edible food from being thrown away. A 2015 study from the Cornell Food and Brand Lab and the Getulio Vargas Foundation shows that the top causes of food waste in such homes, in homes, include, number one, buying too much, buying more than we need. Number two, making more than you need or can eat. Number three, related to that, unwillingness to consume leftovers. So we make more than we need and then we don't eat the leftovers. Number four, improper food storage. Number five, confusion about sell by or eat before dates unpackaged foods. So we overbuy in general. We overbuy cheap packaged food that's available everywhere we turn. We forget to or are unwilling to eat our leftovers. We leave our doggy bags in restaurants. We throw away food because of misunderstandings about what the sell by or use by date means on a label. And we suffer little or no consequences for scraping edible food into a garbage can. By the time we throw away food, we've shirked responsibility for what we should be responsible for. Remember the definition of waste? I don't know if I said it in this last episode. I love Paul Palmer's definition of waste, which is any object for whom the owner has stopped taking responsibility. Basically, any object where the person who owned it at some point has shirked his responsibility or her responsibility. So because of this, we contribute to much larger problems because we don't see the consequences of our behavior because we've given that responsibility over to someone else, and then we can pretend that they don't exist. And people across all economic spectrums are doing this, of course, all of this, and including wasting food. It's not just those who have money to spare. In fact, the researchers who I mentioned earlier termed this the food waste paradox, referring to the fact that even low-income families are wasting food that's perfectly edible, regardless of income. So those are the drivers of consumer food waste: stocking too much food, overpreparing or not cooking it properly, like burning food, stocking too much food, leaving food on dishes after meals or not willing to consume leftovers, prepared food becoming decayed after long or inappropriate storage. All of these are the reasons we throw food away. And the good news is that we can do something about it with just a few changes. So let's take a look at each one of these and how we can reduce, stop, prevent food waste. Number one, I mentioned the confusing sell-by labels. A study by the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC, in partnership with Harvard Food Law and Policy Clinic, aptly named this study The Dating Game: How Confusing Food Date Labels Lead to Food Waste in America. It suggests that the leading cause of food waste at the retail and consumer levels in the United States is due to uncertainty over food expiration dates, in particular, confusion over and lack of regulation around labels that say best before or which have sell-by dates or use-by dates. I know you can relate to this. We see it on every packaged food. But this isn't just a U.S. phenomenon, obviously. This happens all around the world. A report published in 2011, a different report, by RAP, a nonprofit organization that works to reduce food waste in the United Kingdom and other European countries, reported that confusion over date labeling accounts for an estimated 20% of avoidable household food waste. So this issue is prevalent all around the world. Grocery stores toss out huge quantities of edible food for this reason. And don't forget, most of that food is packaged. So tons of plastic and non-biodegradable packaging is going to dumps and sitting for hundreds of years. This is something we haven't even discussed yet when we talk about waste related to our food. I'm talking about organic matter. I haven't even talked about all of the waste that occurs because of packaging. And that's one thing that has really changed for us. Someone asked me recently what the biggest changes in my life since we started this journey. And I would say, I haven't really bought any products, including my favorite vegan products. I'm making my own versions at home and I think they're fantastic. Love, you know, many vegan food products and companies, and I want them to succeed. And there's a lot of packaging, and I don't want to contribute to packaging. So I haven't bought in several months now. And by the time this podcast is played for years, I will say, you know, I don't know, maybe years that I haven't bought, you know, products. So we're not even talking about the packaging when we talk about food waste, because a lot of it comes from packaging, including vegan food. So that's number one, is that we're tossing out huge quantities of food because of the confusion over these labels on food. That isn't an issue. I mean, I've never been one to be rigid about that. I've always been a little loosey-goosey about it. But since, you know, we've been doing this journey and we only buy food that's in the bulk section, it really hasn't been an issue. We don't see those dates because by the time they're sold in the bulk section, the presumption is that the grocery store is, you know, is making sure that everything is fresh. But this is where the confusion lies. And it also affects this grocery stores. And I'm sure it also affects the grocery stores who have bulk. They are told by the manufacturer that they have to sell it by a certain date. Now, here is the most important thing to remember, is because there's so little information about this issue and a lot of fear and a lot of confusion, consumers have become so conditioned to believe that food past its expiration date or sell-by date, we've come to believe that it's unsafe or that it's bad. So as a result, we throw away food that's perfectly safe to consume. Here is what we want to do. Put this to rest right now so we can eliminate this particular reason as an excuse for tossing out perfectly edible, perfectly safe food. Here's what the study found. Quote, all those dates on food products, sell by, use by, best before, almost none of those dates indicate the safety of food. And generally speaking, they're not regulated in the way many people believe. The current system of expiration dates misleads consumers to believe they must discard food in order to protect their own safety. In fact, the dates are only suggestions by the manufacturer for when the food is at its peak quality, not when it's unsafe to eat. I really encourage you to read this study, the study called The Dating Game by NRDC. It's a fascinating look into the history of these warning labels and into what the recommendations are for the food industry, for food producers, for the government, for consumers. And of course, I always recommend you work with your local, state, and federal government representatives to improve policies and systems such as food label confusion. And there are organizations working on this. But what I want to do is talk about what you can do in your own home to relax a bit around food labels, how to determine if food is safe to eat, and how to actually properly store food so it remains safe to eat. Now, you heard me say those labels are only suggestions by the manufacturers, and they have to do with when food is at its peak not when it's not safe to eat. So the main thing we can do as consumers, and I will keep repeating this, we consumers are responsible for 40% of food waste. The best thing we can do is educate ourselves and each other to understand this vital fact. Storage temperature is the main factor impacting food safety, not the amount of time that has passed since the product's production. Okay. Understanding the critical importance of keeping refrigerators at temperatures below 40 degrees Fahrenheit is key to preserving food safely. The USDA also affirms that, quote, even if the date expires during home storage, a product should be safe, wholesome, and of good quality if handled properly and kept at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below. Echoing this assertion, the FDA's Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition has noted that most foods, when kept in optimal storage conditions, are safe to eat and of acceptable quality for periods of time past the label date. Now, when I'm talking about this, when I'm talking about packaged products, for me, obviously, I'm talking about vegan products. I'm not talking about animal-based meat, dairy, or eggs. There's a whole other world of pathogens to consider that may not necessarily be related to how long a product has been in your home, but really more around, you know, food safety, having to do with pathogens that plant foods don't have to worry about. Remember, Listeria, Campylobacter, Salmonella, those are all zoonotic diseases, meaning they're from animals, not plants. The worst you may get on a plant is aphids or a worm or mold, which is very different than these foodborne illnesses. So I'm talking about food safety related specifically to these labels. And frankly, I'm talking related specifically to the labels on vegan products. But of course, overall, in terms of educating yourself, this applies to all products, all of them. But as far as the vegan cheese in your fridge, for instance, that's past the sell date, or the almond milk, check them to see how they look and smell and taste. If they're past their sell date and they smell okay and you drink it and it tastes okay, or you eat it and it tastes okay, that's because that sell date does not mean it's past its safety or even taste. It's just, like I said, a suggestion, and it also has to do with when something is at its peak. That includes produce and bulk items. So we'll talk about that next in a separate section about how to store produce effectively, properly, so that we're prolonging its life in the refrigerator. And even if we're eating something that looks a little tired or a little limp, that is not a safety issue. It is really a flavor and taste and freshness issue. So that's number one, is understanding what those food labels mean. And I hope that you listen to this last 5 minutes again to really, so that penetrates into your consciousness so that you really understand it. We need to like really change the way people think about food labels. And like I said, there are organizations working on changing this because it's very confusing to consumers. And of course, the manufacturers, they don't care. The more something's thrown out, the more they can sell to stores. And the more consumers throw out their product, the more they're going to buy more. So kind of helps. It's kind of in the manufacturer's, it's in their favor to have these labels stay as they are. But unfortunately, what it means for the consumer is that it's more expensive because you're throwing out something that's perfectly good. And it's also a real cost to the environment. Something to consider. So number two, appearances. This kind of is a good segue into the produce. We judge appearances all the time, including with our produce. Remember the ugly produce phenomenon I mentioned in Food Waste Part 1, that tons of perfectly edible fruits and vegetables are thrown away because of arbitrary standards for appearance, shape, and color set by grocery stores. And it means that they reject harvests that in every other way are fine, but because they don't suit the look of a certain standard, that means they are thrown away. And we consumers feed this phenomenon as well when we indicate that we want our produce to look perfect. And we take that a step further in our own kitchens when we judge our produce by its appearance. We throw away a head of lettuce whose outer leaves are slightly wilted, but whose inner leaves are perfectly fine. In fact, the wilted leaves are also fine, but obviously I get that if they're not crispy, they're not going to taste as good. I understand maybe composting those or throwing them in a smoothie, but let's take a closer look at that lettuce and not judge it by its appearance, and judge it rather by its edibility, how edible it is. We do this when we might have fruit in the refrigerator that looks fine, but that we know has been in there for a few weeks. So we just assume it's not fresh anymore, so we throw it out. We do this when some oxidation takes place and there are little brown spots maybe on the celery or the lettuce or the kale or potatoes. The fact is, the number one problem that causes this is that we didn't store things properly. So things start to oxidize, they naturally break down, and then we throw it away. All that's to say is you can eat an apple with brown spots or a potato with, you know, that you may have peeled and put back in the fridge and it has some brown spots, or you can eat garlic that might be starting to sprout or carrots that are starting to look a little soft. One trick for using produce that looks a little tired is to convert it into a more edible or potable form. For instance, before I was leaving for a trip, in fact, it was the Vietnam trip, I had apples in my refrigerator that admittedly I did not love. I think someone bought them for me because apples never go to waste or sit around for long in my house because I eat at least one apple a day, always Fuji, and I love apples. The point is, I didn't love these apples. And I wasn't eating them, but I didn't want to just discard them, even if discard meant composting them. We'll talk about that in the compost episode. So because I didn't have any carrots, and I would have just made a carrot apple ginger juice if I had carrots, I decided to make apple juice. I have never made apple juice, and it was delicious. I know that sounds silly. I've obviously made forms of juice because I have a juicer, and I make usually my carrot apple ginger juice, but I've never made just straight apple juice. It was delicious, and if I hadn't had it for lunch, I would have frozen the juice. Now, keep in mind, and we'll talk more about freezing items in your freezer in that are liquid. So when storing liquids in a jar or bottle in the freezer, to prevent the jar from cracking, the main thing you need to be aware of is that liquid expands when it freezes. So don't fill it up all the way. Don't fill the jar up all the way with the liquid. Just fill it about halfway or three quarters of the way. So I would have frozen the juice had I not drunk it right away. Here are some other ways of converting tired-looking produce into a form that will ensure its consumption rather than its dumping. You can pickle almost any fruit or vegetable to create briny snacks or relishes or garnishes. You can pickle peppers and beets and onions and cauliflower, fennel, watermelon rinds. Truly, one of the best things I've ever had, we were at Millennium Restaurant many years ago. Well, we go pretty often because it's just around the corner. And Eric Tucker, who is the chef, I think it was a starter, or he just gave it to us. Pickled watermelon rinds, for those of you who already pickle, you're like, yeah, whatever, duh. I've never pickled. I'm going to just say it right now, but I'm really excited to get into pickling. And I'm not a huge, I would have said before the watermelon rinds that I was not someone who loved pickled things. Except for pickles. I like pickled cucumbers. But I loved these watermelon rinds. Anyway, you can pickle anything. They were, and what a wonderful way to use food that you would normally compost or, you know, throw out, God forbid. But you can pickle anything and find lots of recipes on the web. I am really excited to perfect, I don't know, forget perfecting pickling. I'm really looking forward to just starting pickling and then perfecting pickling. On that note, you can make a homemade kimchi, which is a staple condiment in Korean cuisine, typically consisting of pickled carrots and cabbage and radishes and onions. I am not a kimchi fan, but my husband is. And so I'm looking forward to working on some fantastic kimchi recipes. On that note, you can ferment cabbage and make sauerkraut. I'm not a fan of sauerkraut. You see a theme here, but I will work on recipes because I want you to have the best sauerkraut, homemade sauerkraut recipes possible. But my point is, that's an example of what to do with cabbage, is that you can make sauerkraut. You can learn canning to preserve fruits and vegetables. You can turn your tired looking fruits into jam or jelly or preserves or marmalade, or even more simply, you can just turn them into chutney or a compote if you don't want to go down the whole canning route. Or preserving root, rather, but that's an easy thing to do, is make a fruit chutney. You can turn tomatoes into tomato sauce or tomato paste. You obviously can make a vegetable broth or stock with onions, carrots, garlic, whatever you have that you would otherwise compost, get rid of, i.e. compost. You see where we're going to be going with the part three. Compost is really the final frontier. It is not the first frontier. So these things that you would normally maybe compost and think that's really good, Turn them into something edible. Turn lemons into lemonade, literally, or oranges into orange juice, especially if you're not going to eat them. If you're only going to use the juice, you can also do something that's really awesome, is that you can basically get the zest. You can zest the orange or lemon or lime. So if you're using any citrus before squeezing the lemon or eating the flesh or both or whatever, just zest the skin first from the, you know, from the rind, and you can freeze that zest. And then you have lemon zest, orange zest, lime zest in the freezer for any time you have a recipe like cake or muffins. You just thaw the jar for a couple hours, if that, and you can use it for baking or for cooking or for just a dressing. I mean, for so many different things. It's a wonderful way to use something that is typically pretty special, and you wouldn't, you know, you, going out to the store to buy zest is, you know, it's, I don't know. And I don't know who would buy zest, but to get a, you know, to go buy a lemon just for zest, because often when people need zest, they just usually, you know, they will use the juice. But when people use the juice, they don't usually take the zest. So take the zest, use every bit of the lemon. The tired apples I mentioned, of course, I made apple juice. You could also turn it into apple cider. I have not made apple cider vinegar. Sorry, apple cider vinegar, which I have not done yet. I am going to start experimenting, but I was leaving the country for 2 weeks, so I wasn't going to start experimenting with vinegar before I left, but that's an option. On that note, I could have turned my apples into an alcoholic drink, such as hard cider, or applejack, as it's called in some places. I could have used them to make apple pie or apple cobbler or apple cake. You could use anything to make some kind of baked good, imperfect or perfect. Carrots could be used to make carrot cake. Of course, there's my favorite in the Joy of Vegan baking. Blueberries could be used to make blueberry muffins and blueberry cake, and lots of recipes in the Joy of Vegan Baking. Bananas that are overly ripe could be used to make the infamous banana chocolate chip muffins in the Joy of Vegan Baking. Or they could be frozen, of course, the bananas, and peeled first. I peel them first and then break them up into chunks and freeze them. Anything that's tired in the fridge can be transferred to the freezer, and I will be creating a guide for that as well. Number three, so number one is understanding food labels. Number two is turning tired-looking fruits or vegetables into something more edible or potable. Number three is properly storing produce. The truth is, one of the reasons vegetables start to go limp, or the bananas overripen too quickly, or the tomatoes begin to get soft too quickly before you could eat them, is not only because we're not eating them, we do waste the food just as a given, but because we aren't properly storing them. So supporters of $30 a month and higher, as I mentioned, you get bonus material for the podcast. When I send you the transcript for today's episode, which is, of course, available to everyone at $10 above, the $30 and above will also get two special guides. One is the A to Z guide to storing vegetables without plastic, and two is the A to Z guide to storing fruit without plastic. So let's focus on proper storage, which you guys will get those printouts. But if we're going to buy something, I love this paradigm for when we purchase something, even a banana, we need to take responsibility for it. I keep coming back to Paul Palmer's definition of waste that I said, waste is any object for which the owner has not taken responsibility. So let's take responsibility. Take good care of the produce you buy. Learn how to store it properly so it lasts longer in the fridge. And don't be afraid of a little wilting or browning. In fact, some vegetables can be reinvigorated. Aside from oxidation, one of the reasons produce starts to break down is because it's losing its water. With proper storage, you can slow down this process. But if you notice your celery or your carrots start to get limp, for instance, and you're not quite ready to eat them yet, and you don't want to make a carrot cake or whatever, one other thing you can do is just hydrate them. Just put them in some water and they'll plump up. And then eat them, okay, or turn them into a carrot cake. Or not celery cake, because I don't have any recipes for that. Number four, buying more than we need and not eating what we buy. What's the best way to avoid having so much produce in your refrigerator that it starts to compost before your very eyes and you feel there's no other recourse but to throw it out? Well, first of all, I already gave you a number of ways to repurpose fruits and vegetables so that you do eat them in a different form and you don't throw them out. But really, the best advice I can give you in this regard is to not buy too much food. I think when you really start to pay attention to how much food you waste, you'll start backing into the solutions that work for you and your household. You'll start to see where you're maybe buying more than you need and why and what things you can tweak to avoid that. Here are some of the reasons people typically tend to buy too much. See if you can identify with any of them, which may help you begin to solve your own food waste in your own home. Overestimating how much we need, overestimating how much we typically eat, not having a plan for our meals or our family's meals, not shopping with a list, impulse shopping, and impulse buying. Here are some thoughts and suggestions for shopping wisely that will result in your saving money, saving the planet, i.e. reducing your own food waste. Some of this is taken from the 30-Day Vegan Challenge, so this may sound familiar to some of you. But number one, I've said this a million times in my talks and in the book, don't wait until dinner time to decide what to have for dinner. We do need to plan better. Giving our meals a little forethought can make all the difference, and that doesn't require anything more than thinking. You don't have to do anything. Most people decide what they're going to eat once they're already hungry, and at that stage, we don't make the best decisions in terms of nutrition, or even taste. We make the decisions based on speed or cravings. It might be another story if we follow my first piece of advice and have chopped up vegetables in the refrigerator, which is something I do recommend to make them just more edible. But that only strengthens my point, is to plan in advance. When you're planning in advance, you're saying, oh, I bought these carrots on Thursday. Now it's Saturday and I really want to make sure I eat them. So let me chop them up first, or potatoes or whatever, so that they're in a much, in a form closer to being edible than they were if they're just, you know, whole with their tops on. Okay, so plan in advance. The other thing I recommend, which is related to having a plan, is to create a meal schedule. We are fierce creatures of habit, and that can work in our favor or against us. Often it works against us. It doesn't have to be something that's rigid. It might not work for everybody, but I do think having a plan and a schedule, and actually the research bears this out, if you have some kind of schedule that works for everyone, at least a general guide, definitely reduces food waste, and it actually just makes preparing and eating just so much easier. So you can just say something like, Monday nights are for soups and stews. Tuesday nights are stir fries. Wednesday nights are Mexican cuisine. Thursday nights are sandwiches. Friday nights are pasta or pizza. Just something so that you have a plan ahead so that you can buy the food that you need, not more than you need, and you can prepare the food that you need and not waste it, right? So I highly recommend trying something like this. You can just leave that list on your refrigerator, and then when you need to go to the store, you have it right there for you. According to studies, 70% of shoppers enter the grocery store with a shopping list, but only 10% adhere to it. So number one, have your shopping list based on your plan. Pretty simple, right? And then adhere to that shopping list when you go to the store. This is one of the reasons people come home with more food than they need, is they start buying things that are tempting. They go down aisles they don't need to go down. They're tempted at the grocery store aisle because there are impulse items that people buy, and that's why the stores put them there, because they know people are suckers and we buy what's right in front of us. So this is where your food waste audit is going to come in. You're going to see where you start to buy more food. You're going to get a really good sense of your own habits. So keeping a detailed log of what food goes to waste each week is going to really help you make adjustments to your grocery list before you go shopping again. But as you're building your list in your home, and one of the things I do, I keep a chalkboard in my kitchen, and it helps a lot. So if I'm running out of something, it goes right on the board. And when I go to the store, when I'm getting ready to go to the store, I take a picture of my chalkboard, and that works for me. Some people want to transcribe it to a piece of paper. You can also just keep it on your phone in a notes app, or on Google Drive. And frankly, I'm someone who kind of buys a lot of the same stuff again and again, at least the staples. And so you might want to just keep kind of a staple list on your phone or on a Google Drive that you can share with family members who might also go shopping. And you might just say, yeah, just get some of the staples. And then, yeah, sure, we need some extra X, Y, and Z, right? So the staples might always be onions, chickpeas, kale, garlic, ginger, right? And so that's always on your staple list and that's always in Google Drive. So you always have something as a guide to go by. And then as you're making particular recipes, you can write down those ingredients on a chalkboard. And then when you're ready to go to the store, just take a photo of it. And that way you won't forget what you need and you won't get to the store and start willy-nilly buying whatever you need. And then you come home and you don't actually use the things that you bought willy-nilly because you're now not adhering to any plan or recipes. Does that make sense? It sounds like some people might be scared by having that kind of plan, but how's it working for you now? Not. That's what I would ask. How's it working for you in terms of how healthfully you're eating, how affordably you're eating, and certainly how you're eating in terms of food waste? I'm going to guess that we've all got some changes to make. We can all do better. Also, in regards to not buying too much food and not buying more than we need, when we put off going to the grocery store, we find that we have things in our cupboard and pantry and freezer and refrigerator that we didn't really think we had, or we just weren't looking because we were constantly thinking that we need to keep buying something, right? So we always say that there's nothing in the house to eat. My cupboards are bare. I'm nothing in the refrigerator. Chances are you have something in the refrigerator. Chances are you have something in the cupboard. So when you put off going to the store, you actually get creative and you also use up things that you wouldn't otherwise use, right? So I mentioned the apples. If I weren't going away, perhaps I would have said, oh, I don't really have any, thing in the house. Let me go get some more food. And I might buy more apples. And I was like, well, I had these apples sitting in the fridge that I wasn't using, but I'd buy more apples because I want the apples that I really want, which is fine. But as long as I use the apples that have been sitting in the refrigerator for several weeks, and in this case, they were sitting in there for several weeks. So when we say there's nothing to eat in the house, chances are there's actually something in the house. Before we were leaving for our trip, I was eating everything that we had in the refrigerator. This was the first time I really ate everything in the refrigerator. If you saw my picture on Instagram, it was completely bare, except for obviously some bottles and condiments, because we still have that as we're whittling down the products we have from prior to our zero waste journey. But one of the things I've noticed in all the years I've been going out of town and having sitters stay at our house, which is always, is that for whatever reason, they don't eat what's in our refrigerator. And I leave sometimes food that's already made, like dishes, like soups or stews, or certainly lots of produce. So at one point, as we were traveling a lot more, I was thinking, well, I don't need to eat up everything in the refrigerator because we're having people come here and stay and they're vegan and they'll eat the food. They don't. I don't know why. They don't eat the food. So this time I thought, no, I'm not going to do that because the food's going to go to waste because we're going to be gone for 2 weeks. I'm not going to get to eat it. And the sitters who are lovely and wonderful and vegan don't eat my food. I don't know why. So I just took that pressure off of them. And I also took the pressure off. Well, I also just removed the factor that would create food waste because we would be gone for so long. So this time I cleared it out completely. So delay going to the store. You'll see that you have actually more. And that's not everything I was eating was edible. Everything that I was clearing out from the fridge was great. It's just that, maybe because you've had it for a while, you think, oh, I've got nothing and I want to go get more. And then that stuff that's been sitting in the refrigerator goes to waste. That's another tip. Is when you do buy new foods and you still have food sitting in the refrigerator, is put the food that you've had for a while in front and then put the new things in the back. Because what tends to happen is we just shove all the stuff that's been sitting in the refrigerator longer in the back and the new things in the front, and then we keep eating the new things, and that stuff that's been sitting there for a while now sits there even longer. We don't use it and then we wind up throwing it out. One of the other things that was fun is before we went out of town, we were going to a friend's house for brunch, and I wanted to contribute something, so I decided to make some chocolate cupcakes, and I had everything I needed. Actually, I decided to make some chocolate cupcakes with strawberry frosting. And the reason I chose that is because I knew I had strawberries frozen in the freezer that I had bought at the farmer's market. I bought fresh strawberries at the farmer's market a month before, and I had them frozen in a mason jar. I cut the leafy tops off before freezing them. And I wanted to do something with the strawberries. So I was thinking, what did I have in the house that I could use to make these cupcakes? And, like I said, things were getting bare in this house. I had some staples. I had what I needed in terms of flour and sugar, et cetera. But I really wanted to make. So I really wanted to make these cupcakes. So I thawed and pureed the strawberries. I added them to the frosting. And then I looked in my pantry, in my drawer of baking decorations. I don't have a lot of baking decorations, but I did have some of which have been in there for like 5 years in jars, including these really pretty pink edible rose petals that someone gave me as a gift. And they've been sitting there for years, even if no one ate them at the brunch, which I don't remember if anybody did. They were edible. But even if no one did, I had these rose petals that I could then use for my decoration. I'm going to include the picture because I don't think I've put that picture out yet on the show notes for today's episode. And I topped the cupcakes with them. I had gorgeous cupcakes that I wouldn't have had I not gone to that drawer, because they've just been sitting there for 5 years. So in the spirit of just wanting to use things I have in the house, and that's one of the things the zero waste journey has definitely aided, is I'm just using things that I have that I would normally just keep, you know, shoving to the back of the fridge or the back of the cabinet, even toiletries. Normally I just, you know, you get more things and you shove the old stuff in the back. Well, I'm not doing that anymore. So I'm finding things and using things that I've just been sitting there for a long time. That morning of that brunch, David and I also had some leftover homemade sourdough bread that a friend had brought over. And I also felt like having some jam on my toast. I don't buy jam a lot. Just whatever. I just don't eat a lot of things that have jam on them. But I just was like, oh, I would love some jam on my bread. So we had no commercial jars of jelly or jam or preserves in our fridge, so I asked David to look in the cupboard where I knew I had a bunch of jams that had been given to me over the years as gifts, again, which had been sitting in the cupboard for probably 5 years, because I remember one of them was a gift when we moved into this neighborhood. And I know that over the past 5 years, I have bought brand name jars, even though I had those preserves in the cupboard, right? So keep buying new commercial brands, but I had all these jams and preserves. So we decided to open one, and I knew that the canning process would preserve the preserves and the jam just fine. And it's true. They were fantastic. So it was just another example of using something that would normally be past some arbitrary eat-by date. Like if those were commercial preserves and you saw the date, you'd probably go, oh, I'm not going to eat this now. You know, if it was 5 years old, right? And they'd probably get pretty sugary at that point in the fridge, I would imagine. But the point is, those dates are arbitrary, and there is no label on a gift that was given to me by a neighbor. So it wasn't an issue. It was a non-issue. And I ate the preserves and they were fine. And I, you know, it wasn't an issue at all. So it's just really fun to just keep discovering things that are even right in my own house. So use what you have, make a stew with those homemade beans, make a pilaf with that brown rice. Spoiled as we are, we think we have to run to the store every time our refrigerator isn't packed to the gills. So be creative, stretch out your visits a little longer. You will save money and you will prevent waste. And as you venture to create less waste in general, packaging waste and not just food waste, you're going to spend more time in the produce and bulk departments, and you don't need to traipse around the store, which also saves time. So you're going to concentrate your food shopping in the local produce area, obviously in the farmers markets. And what you'll hopefully reconsider is shopping in big box stores like Costco. I realize people really like shopping in these stores, but a lot of waste comes from these stores. Now, there might be Costco's that you like because they have a pretty good produce section, and that's fine. But otherwise, there's so much packaging in these stores, and there's really no bulk food section. In fact, the researchers of the Cornell study I mentioned found that strategies that are intended to save money, such as buying in bulk at big box stores, not buying in bulk like in a bulk section of a grocery store, but these big box stores, and shopping monthly, like these usually are strategies that people use to save money, like buying at these big box stores and then shopping, you know, just doing one big shopping escapade. The researchers found that these habits actually contributed to the generation of food waste and ultimately did not result in savings. So shopping more frequently results in less food waste. And I can attest to that. I go to the grocery store a few times a week to pick up what I need. Now, that might not fit everybody's schedule. I get that. I'm not saying you have to do that. But the idea is that studies show that doing these, you know, one big trip to the grocery store once a month doesn't save you money, and it actually creates more waste. So we're talking about some habit changes for you that might be difficult, but these are just things to consider. Food for thought. Finally, related to buying more than we need, one related area where food waste occurs is when we shop to make food for a party, whether it's a dinner party or a holiday or birthday celebration. So invariably, we overestimate how much food we need to make. And, you know, fewer people always come than we originally expected, and we wind up throwing food out. There's an app by the folks at Save the Food that they came up with to help estimate how much food you need for parties. It's called the Guestimator, like G-U-E-S-T, Guestimator, and it helps reduce food waste by accurately predicting how much food will be needed for your next dinner party. Speaking of food, as you can hear, Charlie and Michiko, they're both sitting here waiting for me to finish this, and I'm almost finished. The other thing we can do to reduce food waste is to use all of the edible parts of something we're making. One of the things emerging out of this journey is rethinking, for me, is rethinking what I've considered waste in the past by finding uses for parts of plants I historically composted. So for instance, though I don't do this all the time, I'm more discerning about when I peel potatoes or carrots. Now, sometimes a recipe calls for peeled potatoes. I like mashed potatoes, for instance, with the potatoes peeled, but you can have a more rustic mashed potato without peeling them. So that's just one example. I'm eating more of the produce than just discarding them in the compost. Yes, I'm calling compost discarding in this context. Like I said, I'm turning my mushy apples into applesauce or apple juice or what have you. In smoothies, I might use the skin of a kiwi where I wouldn't normally before, or the green leaves from the strawberries, pureeing that also in a smoothie. And instead of composting the greens on the tops of carrots, for instance, making carrot top pesto. So recipe coming, right? So those are just examples of kind of using more of the edible parts than we can. Eat leftovers. When we do make meals and recipes from what we do buy, we tend to shun leftovers. I'm a leftover lover. There are some dishes that I think taste better the next day, having sat in the fridge for a couple days, or one day or a couple days. I always have been. David's been, he hasn't historically been someone who tends to eat his leftovers, but he's been really good about it. I'm so proud of him. I really give him a lot of credit for it. He's been eating leftovers like he never has before. So make the food amount that you need, but I also recommend you can make more than you need. I actually think making more than you need can work in your favor if you don't want to constantly food prep. So make more than you need, but plan ahead and do that, and make sure you plan to freeze it. Or if a day goes by and you realize, oh, no one's going to eat this, or you're going out of town, freeze it. So always planning ahead. And of course, if you're not going to eat the food, the ideal situation is not to throw it away, but to compost it. But as you might have noticed, this composting thing is the final suggestion here on this list. And we're going to devote an entire episode to compost in part three. So the ultimate way to reduce food waste is composting, but it's not the primary way. Does that make sense? So it's the final frontier, as I said earlier. It's the final thing we should consider when finally we have something that, for one reason or another, and it has to be a very good reason, in my opinion, we're not going to eat that thing. We, instead of throwing it into the garbage, we compost it. So I'm going to spend the entire episode, the next episode on part three on food waste, devoted to composting. My throat is literally getting dry because I'm right at the end here. And that's what I'm going to recommend, because the idea is that zero waste is not about waste diversion. It's about waste prevention. So I'll repeat that. Zero waste is not about waste diversion. It's about waste prevention. So in part three, we're going to talk about composting wherever you live, whether you have a yard or a garden or not, whether you rent a home or own a home, whether or not you live in the city, whether you live in the suburbs, whether you live in the country, whether or not you live in a single family home or an apartment or not, or whatever. So we're going to talk about that, so that we can make the choices and we can make differences that really, really have an impact. It's really about stepping up, taking responsibility for our choices. If you decide to buy or eat or peel a banana or a potato or an orange or a watermelon, the fate of those peelings and rinds is your responsibility. As I always say, it's not that we can make a difference, it's that we do make a difference. Everything we do has an impact on someone or something else. It's not that we decide whether we can make a difference or not. What we get to decide is whether the difference we inevitably make is negative or positive. That's it. There are no neutral actions. And so my hope is that each of us will realize that we have such a great responsibility and a great opportunity to create the compassionate world we all envision, and may it be so. Thanks for listening, everyone. And remember, supporters at $10 and above get transcripts to all podcast episodes. $30 in a month get bonus materials, including today's A to C guide to storing vegetables without plastic and A to C guide to storing fruit without plastic. Stay tuned for part 3 of Food Waste, a part of this large discussion about reducing our impact on this planet, on the animals, and on the rest of the world. Until then, for the animals, this is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. Thanks for listening.